It's my distinct pleasure to introduce a couple characters that we've all worked with over the years. I'm going to talk a little bit about the County Well Index, which I think is one of those invaluable tools that a lot of our understanding of the anisotropy and heterogeneities in the natural systems really comes out of the County Well Index. So I'll turn it over to Bruce Blumgren here. He promises a whirlwind slideshow with very few equations.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. And I think we'll be flying through this rather rapidly. I'm going to give you a historical overview of the CWI, in case you don't know what that stands for. It's County Well Index. And originally, we did not have that name when we started working with water wells back in the early years, Bruce Olson and I. Okay, what did we have going on at the survey in pre-1972? That was basically the year I came to work at the survey with Bruce Olson. Information at the MGS, basically we had some well log information and survey publications that was gotten by some of the former directors and staff via letters, or they would turn in cuttings and have a geologist look at those cuttings for geologic information. And then we had a system of 3x5 cards where staff geologists went out and copied down well log information. In some instances, this was good. Some instances, it was bad because some of the geologists wouldn't copy down the surficial material. And in some cases where shale and limestone were present, they assumed that to be glacial drift rather than bedrock. So that could lead to some bad interpretations. 72, 73, Bruce Olson and myself, information needs, challenges, and it takes money to make the system run. Our first publication that we put out was basically a handout, water well cuttings, who needs them? We do. Back at that time, we wanted to get subsurface geologic information. We were working with the well drillers in terms of they wanted to know what formations they were in at that time. And also, at this period, most every little city and municipality had their own rules and regulations. And as time went on, 73, 74, the state decided to bring on a water well code. We'd talk to drillers about them collecting samples for us and that we could look at them and get some better understanding for subsurface geology. And also at this time, the state planning agency came forward with some money to map the Hopkins Quad. So what we had to do was contact local drillers and see if we could get access to their well records. Some of them were real happy. You know, they said, this is information that should be shared. Others said, nope, this is private information. I've worked for this. You know, we're not going to allow that. So we started up, after we copied well records, to route up these well logs on seven and a half minute quad. 73, 74, at this time at the survey, water well records, and they were very few at this time, maybe a couple thousand. We were talking to MnDOT, Rudy Ford at this time, to get some idea of what they may have had, you know, for the highways that went through on the Hopkins Quad, and we inventoried, and he says, man, we have about 8,600. We considered this real good information because it had surveyed land elevations and it was tied into a right-of-way map. And the next thing here, prehistoric form of digitizing. Most everybody nowadays has a GPS unit or something. Back then, the only way we could graphically or communicate the location of that well on the quad or in a section was by township range section and six quarter sections. No other way of, you know, plotting it out. We didn't have the computer capabilities we do now. Along with this, there's a problem. Different agencies, in talking with Department of Transportation, they'd started with 0 or 1 as the unique number, and they were up to, at that time, I said 8,600. Bruce and I decided, well, you know, if we're going to assign unique numbers and track our pre-code wells, we better come up with an explanation. So this is a listing of unique number and then the designated user, 0 to 999 MnDOT. And you kind of wonder why the 10,000 to 1999, we started in the early years just going right after MnDOT's numbers. And a lot of those are in cities such as North Oaks and in Roseville and a few other areas. And sort of an afterthought, we decided when the Licensing Act came out, we'd start MnDOT at 100,000, and then we'd take the 200,000 block. And that left a gap in there from basically 20,000 to 100,000, so they were reassigned to MnDOT expiration and abandonment forms. And 300,000 numbers, DNR wanted to use those as their ob wells, but we figured it would be a waste of unique numbers because they would use the 3, the county number, and then the ob well number. We decided, well, a lot of our well records that were already in there had a unique number. And that was another story, getting all that straightened out. So now these numbers are used for mineral borings and test abandonments from wells that are either dry or did not prove out. And then the last batch, 400,000, basically up to 1 million, and we're on the 700,000s now, and we've put in there that we should be able to go up to several million. Also, we had to create a coding form. And in the early days, to get the information in, we took the well log, one sheet of paper, transcribed by pencil, had students do this, onto 3 sheets of paper, and took it over to Key Punch, and they'd key punch it, and then we'd get it back and check it for errors. We also, at this time, did an inventory of borings in the Hopkins area. We were trying to grab any and all information to try and make a complete study as we could. And again, one or two sheets of paper turned into 2 or more, a laborious task. And you may wonder what this may have cost per log to have it input at this time. It started out basically around $1.50, and by the time we, through the years, when we finally ended it, it was up to about $2.50. Okay, data handling. And this is how it looked, really, at North Hall back then. We were fortunate to have a picture of this, of those key punch cards, and we'd take those cards, big stacks of them, drive up, University Computer Center, unload it, they'd load it into the machine, come back, then we'd run it through for errors, and then if you found an error, you had to find that card, pull it out, punch up another one, put it in there, run the batch again to keep it going. And back that time, the mainframe was a CD Cyber computer, 128K RAM. Today, we got a desktop in between, desktop, IBM PC, 20 meg hard drive, 640K RAM standalone. Today's desktop, 320 gigabyte to terabyte hard drive, 4 to 8 mega RAM multi-core processors, extensive networking. And you can see some of the problems, and I'll explain a little bit as we go on. We were also fighting technology. It was to our advantage to move ahead. And digitizing wells at this time, the primitive, was this basically one-armed bandit, we called it, and was connected to a key punch machine, and you'd zero the cursor there, hit a button, and all of a sudden the key punch machine would rattle off into the coordinates, and then we'd take it to the mainframe again and download it. 7475. Basically, we were called it the water well index, and we copied 7-county metro area drillers' records. We encouraged all drillers to participate, and some would and some wouldn't. And we tried gathering information orally from some of the well drillers, because at this time, a lot of the older drillers kept their information in their head. And there's lots and lots of information that was lost when those gentlemen passed on. They knew their area and where they would hit the bedrock. And sometimes we'd go in the neighborhood and we'd go to this house, or, oh yeah, I remember that one, this and that. But you're missing all that glacial stratigraphy also, which is important. Now, this is a picture of when Bruce and I were at the Well Drillers Convention in 74. We didn't have the high-tech stuff for doing a presentation, no PowerPoint. Okay, on one of the panels, this holds true today. The data input, water well contractors, Minnesota Geological Survey doing interpretations, U.S. Geological Survey information that they had, Minnesota Department of Transportation, engineering firms, energy companies, mining companies. We can throw in PCA and a number of other agencies. Going to the center, this was the geological data system. Geologists, hydrologists do the interpretations. We had a unique number for each well log. And actually, this worked back then. We were actually able to print out information, but it was limited to Hennepin County at this time. And we designed out, you know, products and uses. That good data library, use it for hydrologic reports, engineering, geologic, mineralogic, and all these things hold true today. You can probably add on many more things as we advance, you know, our ideas and thinkings in terms of geology and hydrology. And the pre-code wells in 75 State Health Department, they required drillers to submit well records. In the early days, they were not so nice and neat. This is an example. We're going to have several examples. Handwritten, some of these were on the back of receipts. There were a few that were little slips of paper that the driller had done. Some were in little notebooks. Don Rogers, he went to the legal size. This is actually an 8.5 by 14 well log. Kind of nice to work with something like this. Emma Well Company, old Sid Berg, who's no longer with us, he had his own style. And in some cases, we copied well logs from, for instance, this is the city of Bloomington, one of their well records. And sometimes the cities had extra information, such as this, a map to go along with it, to go out there and actually find it, instead of having to plot it on the quad and drive through the neighborhood and pass by it several times without seeing it. Then we had 3x5 cards, front and back. And some of the copying techniques, we had an old thermofax copier. It was a multi-step process whereby you'd take the well log, put this pink sheet of paper on, put it under in this light, take a picture of it, take that out, and you'd grab a piece of paper, match that up correctly on the pink, run it through this heat loop, and lo and behold, you'd have a copy of the well log. That's the back part. And here's a tri-state well log. And in some cases, the drillers had extra information besides just the geologic log. In some cases, we had pump test material, which is useful to hydrologists. Bruce Olson and I at one time were looking back in this period of time. We'd contacted all the water superintendents and asked them, you know, what they had in their databases. Some of them had just about every gallon of water that was pumped out of that well since it was put into production. And sorry to say, some of these have been lost. Blaine was real good at that. We never got back there to get their information. They switched water superintendents. Out went the files. In fact, the new guy called up and he says, "Do you guys have any copies of our well records?" And I said, "What happened?" I said, "You had the best system around." And he said, "Well, the guy before me, I was in between the Don Beckman, who was the real good guy, and the other guy came in here for a while, out it went." We can also pick up some water quality analysis also for some of these wells, which is also important. And in some instances, the cities had a copy of, a well record, and they sort of tracked, you know, what had gone on, made notes, you know, as they were worked on. And this is one that, theoretically, I've got to get out and gamma log here shortly when we get our draw works back from Tulsa, Oklahoma. So there's additional information that you can pull out of the driller's files in regard to well records. As I stated, January 1st, Minnesota state statute require well records to be turned into the Department of Health. Toward the end of the slide, I'll show you what sort of results they got in the early years in terms of this. Again, 75 highlighting 100,000 to 199,099 official water well records. And here we see a nice copy of the Como Zoo well for, at this time it was for the polar bears. You notice we got a unique number up there. We have a set of samples for it. We did a geophysical log. And these are some additional things that are carried along in CWI. And you notice we go to another one. Same well, two different numbers. So you have to enter both well logs into the system, because chances are somebody will have one copy and not the other, and somebody else will have another. And this could, you know, get into some legal hassles. So we'd rather have two well logs for one well than no logs at all for one well. Here's a more modern well record, and if they run over in terms of stratigraphy, they add a page or two. There are some drillers that are really good and detailed in their well records, and there are others that try and use the pen very sparingly. Also, with all the files that we copied, we went into the Minnesota Conservation Department, aka Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Waters Division. Front part, back part. U.S. Geological Well Survey Schedule. We copied all their files in both Grand Rapids office and the St. Paul office, all counties but St. Louis. St. Louis had 5.5 file drawers, and Bruce and I, we'd had enough copying. We used to rotate, you know, two-hour shifts at the survey because the USGS let us borrow their files. Also, we generate our own well record from doing geophysical logging, mainly the gamma logging, and we'll put that into the system. We also have geophysical logs from the U.S. Geological Survey, and we also get them from the private sector. We've had real good luck with Jim Train, and Tyne Well Company also has a logger. We also have monitor wells in this system. Here we have a monitor well, and it gives a site plan, a street plan, where this well is located, so if you're out doing a location. And in some cases, the health department has input these locations based on the maps that are given. And with the technology of air photos and enhancing the 7.5-minute quad, you can get down pretty accurate with this. Okay, on this one we have a monitor well, and this has a GPS location. And in some cases, these are really good. And in some cases, I don't know what the well driller was putting down or transposed digits, because we've had, ran them through on the computer, and we've had wells up in Canada, Mexico, out in the Atlantic and the Pacific Ocean. Okay, here we have an example of an exploration boring. And down in the lower corner, we have UTM grid, and we also have a map that's usually enclosed. Sometimes these points lie one on top of the other, and other instances, there can be, say, a quarter of a mile off. So in this case, we usually go with the map. Now, this is another exploration boring, and this is an angle hole. So we put that in, and usually the angle, the azimuth, and inclination is put in the remarks, because we don't have a column specifically for that. This is a U.S. Steel boring for minerals, and we use the 300,000 numbers for those. And we have had a special project up on the Mesabi Range where one of the companies gave us a lot of their information, and we input this data. Moving on, we have test holes or abandonments. We talked over with Bruce Olson from the Health Department. We use 300,000 numbers for this also. Otherwise, this well record would never make it into the system. And you can see here, this is a bedrock hole. Very important, we're doing a county atlas for Benton County, and this is a nice one to have. Also, certain drillers are real good with the GPS, and I trust Trout rather well in terms of their GPSs. And this is another test boring. This is one of about 70 that were put in about a half-mile square area. And Dave Trout said we could only GPS it. And by doing this GPSing of all these particular test wells, we could get an idea of what the surface was like, whether we had Cretaceous material there or right into the bedrock, and see what the surface looked like. This is an older municipal well log from the city of Goodhue. And you notice well number one has a 200,000 number. And then the well gets relined and deepened. And Goodhue had brass tags on the well at this time, but the driller figured, hey, I'm going to be legal for the state. Turned in a 400,000 number for it. So those are some problems that we run into, reassigning a number for a well that's already been drilled. What we do is use this information in answering phone calls for well drillers, elevator shaft people, federal, state, local agencies, consultants. And there, I don't think a day goes by that the phone doesn't ring somebody seeking some geologic or hydrologic information. Okay, getting back to the early days of locating, but prior to the GPS, this is a 15-minute quad. What we do is take a plat book, look at the pre-code wells that we had with the names of an individual on there, and look at the plat book, shoot it onto the quad. Then we drive out there in teams of two, one being a navigator, one being the driver, and go door knocking to verify. Did you have a well drilled by Johnson Well Company in 1964? And then and 200 feet deep. Yep, we did. And then where was it, basically? And then try and plot it on the quad as best as possible. And we come back into the survey and we transfer locations, the 200,000 numbers, onto our index maps. A lot of you that have been over to the survey know that we have a series of file drawers with these index maps in them. And as time goes on, the state of Minnesota finally had all the 15-minute quads put into 7.5. And we've transferred, as we get regional and county studies, we transfer from the 15 into the 7.5 minute now, using air photos to try and more accurately locate that well. A lot of the 15-minute quads had 20-foot contour intervals, and the 15s have 5 and 10 foot. I keep kidding some people nowadays, the stuff that Bruce Olson, Dale Setterholm, Doug Bergstrom, and I located back in the 70s, people are going to go back out there with GPS units and try and more accurately locate them. And this is a field map, kind of hard to see. This is in the Bloomington area. And in this period of time, we weren't so sure that we could find all the wells, so we'd number them 1, 2, whatever it took for the Bloomington quad. And if we drove out there and we found it, we put a dot on there, circle that number. Then we'd come back to the survey and plot up. And that very dense area off to the left, put in the 200,000 number so we could track it. Then we'd sit down, pick an elevation off the quad, and give it the ABCs. Because most of the records, you know, didn't have any value unless you had a good location and an elevation so you could do the interpretive stratigraphy. And about this time, Bruce and I got into a little trouble. Different consultants came in, same well record, and was down in southern Minnesota. And the guy said, could you do an interpretation? I said, well, we really don't like to. Do you know where it is? Is it up on the bluff or down below? And he says, well, I don't know. Just give me your best guess. So we gave him the best guess. Another consultant went down there, located the well. And we said, yeah, this is this, this, and this. And about a week later, I got a call from a judge. He said, don't you guys know what the heck you're doing there? He says, I got two consultants. And one says it's this, one says it's that. And I said, well, have you had any courses in geology? And he says, yeah, I did. Back at the U, I had beginning geology. And I said, we don't like to give out interpretations unless we have a location. I explained the situation to him, and he told me, I said, do I have to come down and appear in court? And he says, nope. He says, one of those guys was too damn lazy to go out and do his work, what he was getting paid for, so I didn't have to go down at that time. That was just a little story in between here. Then we used blue line air photos. Those were the forerunner to the 15-minute quads. Had orthophoto maps. And also, in locating wells within the county, this happens to be up in Sherburne County. And if you look at the street addressing numbering on the side, this is the old numbering. And all of a sudden, after a few years, they changed to a new numbering system. About the only thing that remained the same was Highway 25 and 10. And in some cases, when you locate the historical wells, as we call them, even some of the ones that were drilled after 1975, you have to check within the counties or the cities to make sure what the correct 9/11 address is, and if they have changed it over a period of time, say, for instance, Route 1 box such and such, to one street address and then change it to another. In Goodhue County, they had one area where they let the people pick their own street address on this one-mile stretch of road, and that was hard locating. Dale Setterholm and I were out there, and we finally found somebody home, and he says, give me the name, and I'll tell you which house to go to. We also had, in some cases, the density was so great that we took and expanded, blew up a quad or a section on a quad so that we could write the numbers legibly in there. We also used half-section maps for locating water wells. This happens to be from Anoka County. They were very good to the Geologic Survey in the early years in that they gave us free copies of these. We also used subdivision maps. We used state park maps to try and find, stop in at the ranger, and he'd point out where the wells were. Oh, there we go. Something didn't transfer there. But for inspection department borings, we used like city maps for Minneapolis and St. Paul and would plot them up as best we could. We didn't have the technology, as I said, available that we do nowadays. Again, a MnDOT boring, coded. One of our geologists would sit down and break it out. And these were plotted on, like I said, right-of-way sheets. It'd have an index map like this, and then it'd go into a real detailed area of where the roads were overlaying the present-day buildings, and there were stationing on these. And we'd plot up literally, I think 1 inch equals 100 feet. Was that right, Chuck? And we'd go on the quad with a scale and measure out, plot all these up, and then we digitize them either with the one-arm bandit or a digitizing table later on. Nowadays, MnDOT has gotten more advanced. They GPS them, as you can see the coordinates up there, and nice detail log that you can get off of the internet. They also have sketch maps or layouts of where the borings were done along the highways. Some cases you can actually go to an air photo with that boring plotted along with the coordinate location. These are some real primitive ones. Minneapolis Sewer Department borings along with the tunnel locations, the layout of the road, and below that it's kind of hard to see. But there's borings, and each one of these we gave a 200,000 number to. Oop, got to go back. And these were digitized and put into the system. We still have all of these. These are about 18 inches, or 12 inches wide, 36 inches long. And we had to piece these together. This is a soil boring from the University of Minnesota done by a consultant, and we did a study back in the 70s, and we used a campus map, very crude, but we got it done, plotted on there. We had to look at a topographic map where these buildings were to extract elevations. 75, 76, digitized locations written to key punch cards, finally gave way to 9-track magnetic tape to floppy disks in 1980. Data use. This was the first big thing that came along, was a joint study with the MGS and USGS, geologic and hydrologic aspects of tunneling in the Twin Cities area. And at this time, we only entered information for specific projects, because money was limited at the survey. Now, this is a more expansive view of the primitive digitizer that we used in the early years, and a whole raft of different types of materials that were used in transcribing the water well into getting it into the computer. Punch cards, floppy disks, Bernoulli, and diskettes. Problems with data entry in the early years: fat fingering unique numbers, getting them in wrong, fat fingering spelling errors, drillers misspellings carried through, because people would say, well, we're just putting in what the driller said, And then when it came to running these things, you're always having problems if they were damp, bent, torn, and they would not read correctly. That created problems in correcting errors. 76 through 81. Again, data entered for special projects, and some of these are the agencies that helped us out keep the inputting of water well data and soil borings into the system. Met Council, USGS, MPCA, DNR, and Scott County, which was the first atlas we worked on. 76, 81 again, beginnings of statewide water well data acquisition. 77, the old LCMR sponsored the copying of old well records state file. We went out state. At this time, we had a water well book listing all the drillers statewide. Bruce and I would get on the phone, start calling, and try and set up dates for copying if they would let us do their historical files. Again, copied the USGS files, Minnesota Department of Health, DNR. We went to cities, copied what they had, and Anoka, several of the townships have well records, such as Ham Lake and Andover. In 77, the health department wanted to get a handle on how many wells were available statewide, 900,000 to 1.6 million. 78, locating water wells statewide, mostly pre-code. 79, only 8,333 in the system. And we began to do geophysical logging. This is not fun during the winter. Again, now it's showing you the numbers that were being used. Now we're into the 400,000 range and beyond. Budget crisis at MGS, 81 to 83. The one line water well index, we stopped data entry there. The only well logs that were being entered now were those that were interpreted. So there were lots and lots of wells that didn't have just the rudimentary well log in there. Tim Wall and Dick Holzman were laid off. No data entry taking place. 83-91, Tim Wall returns. Great. Water well index formatted to run on PCs. Well log still on cyber mainframe. And that's two separate, as I mentioned. We have the one-liners, just the inventory, and then well log, which was the interpreted well record. And 89, digitizing of well locations done on ArcView. This is the digitizing table. One of our staff members, Joyce Mainz. Interactive cyber terminal mainframe gives you an idea of what we have capability-wise. And at this time in 85, 25 to 30,000 well logs, and only 46 of the 87 counties had any information located in them. Doing data entry, they're supposed to be working at it, but I guess they're posing for the picture. 91-97, we have the formal name, County Well Index. Manual was written by Bob Tipping and Tim Wall. Coordinated county groups for data entry, SWCD, County Planning Environmental Services, etc., workshops with Bowser. Merged all data from 87 counties are now in one spot. This was the Old Testament according to the MGS. 91-97, programs written by Tim Wall, basically Fortran. CWI now had 135,000 well records. 97, Bob Tipping and Mr. Lee rewrote a version 4. The GIS locations are still separate from CWI. Digitizing again. 98 to 2009, MDH had general funding to contract data entry through MGS, UMD, and Hibbing via the MGS. 98, we moved CWI-4 to MDH. They had money to maintain our database. We didn't have money to do it. In fact, the computers that we had at the survey, we couldn't operate our own database once it was online. Mr. Olson was kind enough to give us 5 machines so that we could run it at the MGS. 2002, version 5 created. Spatial information is integrated with the well records. And in 2003, we began the GPS location. 2009, digitizing upgraded from ArcInfo version 5 to ArcGIS 9.3. Direct data entry now, and you can do GIS work on the screen also. A couple of Garmins there that we've used, and our Garmins are borrowed from the MDH. This is an example of what well-controlled data intersecting bedrock. The red ones are located bedrock holes, the blue ones are angle holes, and the black ones are unlocated bedrock holes statewide. And an example of the bedrock topographic map using water well data along the area of the 7-county metro area and along the Mississippi. It's a lot more detailed because we input county atlas maps in there. In the rest of the state, it's sort of broad and sweeping lines. And the red indicates high, the blues low. Now, this is an inventory I got from Ron Thompson, early years, 72. The well records reported drilled. They were just sort of guesstimated, the well drillers, to get keep track of them. They just turned in a number, said the number, and that was it. And then you can see in 75, 9,506 were supposedly reported, and they only got 3,999, less than half. In the early years, it was kind of hard to get the drillers to turn in the well records. And then finally the legislature said the drillers were making a living at using the state's resource, so they said in order to get their license renewed, they had to turn in their well records. So then at about 90 in there, we got a more accurate reading of what is coming in. And you can see the number of ceiling records in the beginning, and they weren't really pressing that in the early years. CWI inventory over the years there, and you'll notice from 93 to 98, you know, we had a, you know, things were going along pretty good. And then we have a big jump in that we had a big backlog, and that's when the health department came through with that money, where we could get the entire well log. We still have a backlog of old wells that we need to get the well record, the driller's log, stratigraphy in. And then we had some money that was available, and we made another big jump. We had two women doing key data entry for us, and we were catching up. We had some well drillers volunteer to do data entry, and help like that. I'd seen them type before, and I said, we didn't need help like that. I said, you're better off drilling. We appreciate your information. So what you see there on the right is what we have currently as of 10/5/09. And then accessing CWI, version 4, County Well Index online, paper copies of the files at MGS, so we have the backup, and public water supply has data restricted online. You have to talk to Mr. Olson at the Minnesota Department of Health to get permission to get access to those. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I know this was quick and fast and a lot to cover. Thank you.